Hello and welcome to NextPod, BP NextGen's podcast made for veterinary students and young professionals who want to know what's next. I'm your host, Sarah Said, and this episode will be all about what it's like being a veterinary technician today. To share her experience is licensed veterinary technician with a master's in public health, Nicole LaForest. Welcome, Nicole.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm happy you're here. You're currently at VMX. We were just talking about it. So Nicole was like nice enough to take some time out of her day to speak with us.
It's, you know, the exhibit hall closed right now. So it was perfect timing. It lined up perfectly. Awesome.
Well, I want to know more about you. So if you could tell us, you know, how did you even start your career? Like which college / uni did you attend and what was it like from there?
Oh gosh. So I started in 2011 and so when I first started off, I knew beforehand that I wanted to be in public servancy in some aspect, whether it be, an RN, a police officer, firefighter, what have you. I knew that I just wanted to be in that area of like helping people. And one day I was sitting in community college at one that's local in the Seattle area. And, you know, I was just browsing through their catalog, really, really bored. I don't even remember which class it was. And I came across a veterinary assistant program that was in person when we were still able to do that. And, I immediately started there. I dropped out of, I guess, traditional college and enrolled into that, had just a blast doing it. Funny side note, when I had signed up for it, I actually thought it was a veterinary technician course. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be done in 10 years. And I went, or 10 years, oh my gosh, 10 months. And hopefully it doesn't take 10 years. And I thought it was a vet tech program. So when I got out, I was like, where's my degree? And they're like, oh, you're not getting one. So which was totally fine. It was a great stepping stone to make sure I actually loved the profession. I got hired right away at a private hospital. And then when I was working there, I signed up for Penn Foster, which is where I graduated from. It took me, so I think at that point, it was 2013. And I think it was like the first of the year. And I was just saying, new year, new me, let's get it started. You know, we always talk about New Year's resolutions, but we never do them. So I did, I did Penn Foster, which if anybody knows or doesn't know, so Penn Foster is an online veterinary technician program, but it is also a hybrid. So you do all of your learning online, your book work online, and then you go into the profession and you're doing about 250 hours in person clinical work just to kind of get your skills, set up so that you can take the VTNA and be successful. So I graduated from that program in 2015, and I immediately went into specialty practice. So I kind of went in really strong in my career. I started working in orthopedics and surgery, which is an area where I actually met my husband, and now we co-own a surgery practice together. We are ambulatory, which means that we go to different hospitals in our area. We don't have a big fancy truck or van, and we just do surgery there. And I have been, working with him for 6 years. And, just right now, I am actually working in the public health industry as an epidemiologist. I needed a little bit more here in the public health aspect of, medicine, but we do handle a lot of zoonotic diseases. And I really get to bring, my animal skills into my human skills as well and bring them together. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. That's kind of me in a nutshell over the past 10 years.
Well, very impressive for sure. Thank you. And also your romance with your husband, that's such a cute story, like the moment you met in the clinic kind of thing.
We met in the operating room.
Oh, wow. Even more.
Yeah. Oh my God. So I walked into work and I was just like, who is this? And so I, put on my surgery bonnet and got my little booties on and I just, snuck in and I was like, okay, I think you can do this. And he felt the same way. So
that's amazing. Yeah. Wow, I love that. And how is it like to, you said you kind of jumped right into a specialty. Like, did you make that, was that always your goal or did it just kind of happen?
So it was always my goal. I do enjoy general practice, and I still will do relief. But I knew that I wanted something a little more fast paced, and that allowed me to use the skills that I was taught in college. So in a way, specialty medicine was kind of where I know I wanted to end up. I think primarily emergency medicine was where I thought I would go. And the whole, you know, meeting my future husband and orthopedics kind of fell into place. So yeah, I kind of did just walk into it, get thrown into it. So it's been a lot of fun.
So nice. And so what is it like for people who might not know, like, what is it like to work as a vet tech within like a surgery room? Like, is what kind of things do you do and have to deal with like on a regular basis?
So, oh gosh, so much. So my job, obviously, in and outside the surgery room, I prep the patient. I induce them for anesthesia. I intubate them, put in a breathing tube, and I basically will prep the patient. And a lot of it, obviously, because we're orthopedics, is shaving limbs or shaving complex tumors or what have you. And then we wheel them into surgery, and I will get them all hooked up to their monitoring equipment, monitor them while I'm prepping them for surgery, actually doing that final scrub. In my practice, because we are orthopedics, I do a lot with joint blocks, if you will. So I do a lot of blocking of various joints, various areas, depending on where we're doing surgery. So, and obviously with a block, we want to make that patient numb in that area. And, you know, even though they are under anesthesia, the more pain that we do create, they can slowly try to come out of anesthesia. So the more multimodal approach that we have, so doing like a local block of like lidocaine, bupivacaine, some of you might be familiar with that if you've ever went to the dentist. We basically try to hit them with basically as much pain relief as possible. And then my job throughout surgery is making sure that they're stable and comfortable. I'm always just checking to see what plane of anesthesia they're in. I'm making sure their blood pressure is okay, their ECG looks normal, and, you know, keeping an eye on the surgeon, make sure that, you know, they're doing their job right. Of course, we do kind of lead the operating room, whether they like to believe it or not, and, you know, just getting him supplies as he needs them. So that's kind of what I do on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. And so for you, like what kind of surgeries, I guess, would an orthopedic, vet tech be involved in? Like, is there like a, like kind of regular things that come in all the time?
Yeah. Oh yes. So, a lot of it's knee surgery. Knee surgery in dogs is actually a multi-million dollar part of our industry. So we're seeing, six to seven, primarily again, knees a day. We're just going back to back, doing basically various procedures. There are over 100 different knee surgeries in literature, but about 3 or 4 of them are actually clinically used every day across the US and the world. So a lot of knees, a lot of broken bones. So whether it is their front leg, hind leg, their hip, pelvis, we fix that all. We do see some spinal cases where we have a pet that was out and about and maybe they got hit by a car and they fractured their back. Or if they, you know, with our long sausage dogs, like our corgis and our dachshunds, they do slip their back often. So they slip a disc in their back and then they do become paralyzed. If it's not corrected within 24 to 48 hours, it could lead to lifelong paralysis. And so we try to get those squeezed in just so we can address that issue and hopefully get their motility back. But so many knees, I would say that's really our bread and butter in our practice.
Wow. I mean, I'm not a vet at all or like a tech or anything like that. So for me, I would have never guessed. I would have never thought about that, but that's Wow. And it's, I'm guessing mostly that it's mostly dogs that you are doing surgery on. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. It's, we do see cats. I would say that cats are maybe about 20% of our patient load. A lot of them do, we see cats more for hip issues and for broken legs or arthritis. Very, very rarely will we do a knee surgery on a cat. And if we do, it's because they have some type of degenerative disease that allowed for some way or another for them to tear their ACL or ACCL, what we call it in veterinary medicine. But honestly, if we have a cat that's a chonky boy, very overweight, we see them rupture their ACLs all the time because it's just so much weight that they have to support on their hind legs, especially when jumping. So that's really the only time that we see cats. I'm a cat person, so it's a little bit of a bummer, but I'm really happy that at least the cats are, you know, smarter than the dogs and are actually able to, you know, protect themselves from injury for the most part.
So what is it like for you just in terms of like mental health and dealing with, you know, obviously a lot of veterinarians and technicians deal with compassion fatigue and all kinds of other stresses. So would you say that your specific role has maybe more of that because you're in surgery like all day? Like, what is that for you?
So that is actually a great question. In no way am I immune for dealing with, you know, the compassion fatigue. With our practice, because people are actually reaching out to us because they need us, they're seeking us out. You know, they don't have to repair their dog's knee by any means. They don't have to, but owners love their pets, as we all know, especially with the uptick of pets being adopted or being purchased throughout the pandemic. And so again, like we have wonderful clients because they're reaching out to us because they want us, not because they need us. So, and that's really something that I do like to emphasize on, because if you're working in emergency or general practice, these pets aren't coming to you because they want to. And these owners aren't coming to you because they want to. It's generally because they're trying to prevent an issue, or it's on an emergency basis. They're trying to get into the ER. They're having the worst day of their lives. Where again, in orthopedics, we're just here, we're chilling. Whenever you need us, we'll, you know, we'll be hanging out here. So it does have its good and its bad days. But I would say for the most part, being in this like special like niche, we don't really get to see as much as our coworkers. So unfortunately, we do get to, you know, watch it unravel. And we're there to support them as much as possible. Of course, we love our coworkers across the 30 hospitals that we go to, which is nice. You know, we get to be a good support system from them because we're happy and bubbly when we come in every day. So,
right. So what was the pandemic like for you? You said, you know, just now that you worked with 30 hospitals. So was there any kind of limitations being put on to where you could go and stuff like that?
So we didn't have per se like any restrictions. Like we were still permitted to go into the hospitals, obviously wearing a mask, doing our best to kind of, you know, stave off the coronavirus. I would say at the beginning of the pandemic, we definitely had our caseload went down because everyone was just scared. And I totally respect that. And I think we all were scared, of course. We had no idea what was going on. And slowly business did start to build up again because we realized we're not going anywhere. We're still stuck here almost 2 years later. And, you know, with everybody losing their jobs during the pandemic, that was really difficult too. Obviously more for them than for us. You know, we still have sources of income. So that was really difficult, but I think once people realized that they can work from home and they're able to do so successfully, then they started to realize like, it's okay for me to spend a certain amount of money taking care of my pet. So it was kind of hit and miss. And then obviously with the holidays coming up, that always makes it a little bit tricky, but you know, I'd say for the most part, we did fairly well.
Yeah. I mean, that's really good to hear for sure. And in terms, so I want to talk to you about your social media because you have an Instagram page that is, you know, has like thousands of followers and, you know, a lot of people, within the vet industry can connect on there, whether it's about medicine itself or just like other, things that they deal with. So what kind of made you start it? Did it just grow by accident or was it all planned? Like, I want to know the story.
I love this question. So I get it a lot. So when I first started out my Instagram, I really had no direction that I was supposed to go, and I was fresh to Instagram as a whole. So I had no idea what I was getting into. I just knew that like a lot of celebrities were on there, cute pictures of everybody. It was a very positive platform for a very long time, maybe not so much anymore. But so with our practice and within Washington State, which is where our practice is, we do have some interesting laws that kind of surround veterinary medicine, if you will. So because we are what's considered ambulatory or locum, we are not permitted to carry medical records off of the site where we did the surgery at. So we can't take them from the hospital where we did surgery and, you know, keep a copy, whether it's electronic or paper. We're just legally not allowed to do that. So when I first started out with my page, I just wanted an area to where I could somehow document what we were doing. So it was, you know, this is a knee surgery that we did today. And then if the client ever called for questions that said, hey, Dr. Mayo, who is my husband, saw my pet last Thursday. I am just looking to get like a little bit more information. And then I would hop on my Instagram and I would scroll down and I'd be like, oh yes, yes, we remember your pet, absolutely. And then I realized what hashtags did. And so I just started like adding random hashtags to my posts. And then it kind of took off, I would say pretty quickly. And I'm about, I want to say 40 followers away from hitting 31,000. So
wow. Yeah,
it definitely has grown. And then I also have a TikTok too, which I started 6 months ago because I was like, oh, I really like this platform, can spend my entire day on it. And I sometimes do. And so I started my TikTok about 6 months ago, and my first three videos had 1.5 million views, 3 million views. And I would say most of them are within like the upper thousand range, like maybe 60,000, 70,000, 150.
Wow.
So yeah, so I actually have more followers now on TikTok than I do on Instagram, which I was kind of like a little hurt by, honestly.
You know what? It's just the way the world is now. Everybody's on TikTok way more.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, you know, I spent years trying to grow my Instagram and, you know, hone my skills on Instagram. And then frick, within like like 1 month of being on TikTok, I was already at like 39,000 followers. And it's just, I didn't put in the years of work to get there like I did with Instagram. So, you know, in a way it was kind of a bummer. I was like, wow, that easy, huh?
Oh yeah, that's one video can go viral and then yeah. No, there you go.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, well, that was fun. And now I don't really post a lot anymore because it's just not, the hard work hasn't really gone into it. So it's a lot, even though I have more followers, you know, great, whatever, it's the hard work. And that's kind of where I'm at with Instagram. I don't care how many followers I have at this point. I want my work, my hard work, to be recognized. And if at any point it's not being recognized, then close my Instagram down. Like,
what kind of content, like, are you most interested in sharing, or that like really is a passion of yours to share with all your fellow techs and vets?
So a lot of it is surgery, because we get some crazy, crazy cases. Some that maybe you've only seen in textbook, never have gotten to see in clinical practice. We've seen teratomas, which is where they have a mass inside of them, generally on an ovary, that used to be like a littermate. It has teeth, it has hair, maybe even some bones. We've seen so many of those. And that's only something that you've seen on maybe Grey's Anatomy, because Grey's Anatomy loves that stuff. And so we just get to see so many wild things that I can't help but not to post it, because I know if I wasn't me, I would want to see that, because my mind gets blown every time.
No, you were just saying that to me now. I'm like, I need to relook at every single picture you post.
Yeah, like I would say surgery is a lot of what I post. I do a lot a post with mental health because it is important. I do actually have a bachelor's degree in cognitive psychology, which is something that I got before I entered veterinary medicine. So it is a real passion of mine. I am, I guess, a victim of bullying in our profession, quite profoundly. A lot of people know incidences where I've personally been bullied. And so I'm very anti-bullying on my page. Like, if you're being a bully in my comments, like, I will immediately make you unfollow me. Like, I have, you know, we on Instagram, you have the power to just click and someone unfollows you. I use that all the time because I just have absolutely no tolerance for it. It's so important to remember that, you know, it doesn't matter that we might be more well-known than others. It doesn't matter when we take away the titles, when we take away social media, we're all the same. And we still are the same, regardless of that being present. But, you know, it's actually so funny. I've recorded maybe 10 different podcasts, and I swear to you, I've cried through maybe 5 of them.
No, I mean, I'm a huge crier. Let me just say that right now. So yeah. If you have emotions, let them out. It's super healthy. And it's just part of being human. Like you said, like, it helps you connect with others. Strange as it sounds, it's like,
it's true. Know,
yeah. I'll like, if I wasn't wearing like a ton of eye makeup, I would do it with you.
My fake lashes are suffering right now. I'm not even kidding. It's been a day for them.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I want to know those. Well, like, what are the positive opportunities and things that came out of your social media experience? Like, has there been, has helped your career as well?
So I would say actually through the pandemic, I hate to say it, but the pandemic has been good to me in various ways. I am finally starting to make money off of Instagram, which everybody wants easy money. Like, that's a universal thing. So it's been really nice, you know, to not only be able to have that source of income, because let's be honest, vet techs and vet assistants don't make a lot of money. So it's really good to have that passive income. And so throughout the pandemic, because I'm having these difficult conversations, no matter how much I cry through them, it's a lot of larger companies have approached me, and it's not even for mental health, campaigns or what have you. They've just noticed me and they say, hey, would you like to partner with us for the year and just basically be a spokesperson for our platform or for this line of products that we sell? And so I've been doing quite a bit of that, as well as a lot of research. I have a few companies that reach out to me to basically help spread the word on paid research projects for other technicians. And so with that being said, just stay tuned to my page, because I'm going to be doing that a lot in a few months. And you can get $100 just by filling out a survey. And I'm just a big, big fan of, you know, where my Instagram is right now. It's got a vibe.
That's good.
Yeah. It just has a fun vibe. That's just what I'm awesome. About.
Well, you know, it's really, I'm sure it's really inspiring for many other people, because when you are in the vet world, that's the reason I wanted to talk to you about all of this too, right? It's like, you kind of are responsible for finding your own clients or maintaining those relationships in some way. And that can be a lot of pressure when, if you're scrolling online as a young student or a young vet or tech and seeing all of these incredible other people who have a lot of followers, and you're like, how do I get there? What do I do? Like, what if I don't have followers? You know, it's like an additional stressor on top of just school and opening a practice or whatever they want to do. So it's really cool to hear somebody who's done it and kind of just see, like, you know, it can happen. And sometimes it takes time too, right? Like you said, it took you years, and it's okay to, like, you know, it doesn't have to, everything is not necessarily going to be instant.
You're not always going to have that instant gratification.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Hard as it is, you know, it's necessary. It's really necessary, a necessary process to go through, because, and that's all of life. We shouldn't be seeking that instant, you know, validation. We really shouldn't, because that's just setting us up for failure. And I think it's really important that, you know, we need to stick through it. This is, regardless of where you are in life, it's a good life lesson to learn that as cliche as it sounds, good things come to those who wait. And yeah, this is just kind of my time. It's my time.
Yeah. And everything like that's worth having too does take work. Like, you know, that's just also like how life is as well. And yeah, it's so good to hear that you're doing well. I want to know as well, like, what's your advice for people who want to, because being a tech is such an incredibly important job in the industry. And there's, from what I've noticed, there's so many different versions of being a tech, like whether you're in a hospital or a smaller clinic or like you in surgeries and stuff. So what's your advice for like somebody who's just started school or just wants to join in the school and like doesn't know maybe which direction to go?
Oh, I love this question. So, you know, when we're all starting out in this profession, you're right, there's so many different avenues. It's just unlimitless. It truly is. I would definitely take everything that you're learning and focus on that. It's going to be laborious, I promise you. But when I first started out, I knew I wanted to work in emergency medicine, and I knew it. I was set on it and got into emergency medicine, did it for 3-4 years, and I got so dark. I went to a really dark place. It wasn't good for my mental health. And you know, to be fully honest with you, transparency, I wasn't being nice to the patients within the past 6 months that I was there. And I had, you know, a conversation at that time, because though I was with my husband at the time, I wasn't working full-time with him. And I sat down and I had a conversation with the owner of the emergency hospital. And I said, I think my time in emergency medicine needs to go. And I had mentioned, I was like, you know, my productivity has gone down. And I was a supervisor there. I had said, you know, my bullying has gone up because no one is immune to bullying or being bullied. And you know, I was just being mean. I was just not in a good headspace. And I moved into surgery. And everyone likes to do surgeries. When we think of surgeries, we think of dental cleaning, spays, and neuters. But I got into surgery. And that's where I truly found my passion, because I didn't really take into consideration how much surgery you can do with animals. And then from there, obviously, when you do surgeries, you kind of hone in on a certain area. You can't be good at everything in surgery. It's not possible. Everybody wants to be. It's impossible. And that's just like saying everybody wants to master veterinary medicine as a whole. It's impossible. It just truly is. There are areas of veterinary medicine I don't know. I don't know the vaccine schedules anymore. Nutrition, I haven't learned about in 8 years. I actually had, I sat down with a nutritionist today at the conference I'm at, just so they could go over what supplements my cats might need. And, you know, and just full transparency. That's just the way it goes. And it's going to take time to figure out what you truly love. And there are people that truly do love emergency medicine, people that have gone back to general practice from specialty medicine, and gosh, reproductive clinics, eye clinics, dental clinics. It's just absolutely, absolutely insane. I would say definitely take your time, learn about the 1,000 different areas that you can go into in vet med. And as you know, we talked about it before we started recording, we have veterinary technicians that are what we call industry members. They don't work in clinical practice. They might be supporting a drug company or an equipment company, food company. And so just, you know, try to think that yes, veterinary medicine is very exciting, but throughout this process, you're also going to age a little bit. And, you know, do you think that when you're 50 or 60, that you're going to be able to bend down and restrain these big dogs like you used to when you were in your 20s or teens or 30s? It's not possible. So you really need to think about the long term. If you think you're going to be happy in one area of veterinary medicine, you should always have a second area that you'll be ready to go into for when you start to get older. Is it management, working in the industry, making your own company? I mean, yeah, the possibilities are unending.
Is there like how, this is going to sound like a silly question maybe, but I don't know at all, like how easy is it to change from one type of being one type of vet tech to another? Like, do you have to take school all over again, or a couple courses or CE or something, like to switch and make a transition?
So that is definitely a great question. I find it is easier to go from specialty medicine into other areas. And I think it's a little bit unfortunate. We find that the technicians and assistants, and even the doctors too, they work in specialty medicine and they're kind of seen as being better than everybody else. They have a vast amount of knowledge. And you know, they find it easier, and truly, they truly do find it easier to go into other areas of veterinary medicine, just because of status. And I'm doing air quotes right now for anybody listening. And so with general practice, and I don't really understand why, because a lot of us start in general practice and then I don't want to say we move our way up, but we move to different areas. It's very hard to get into specialty medicine if you've been in GP for quite some time. I don't know why. I think they think that you're only good at general medicine and that's all you know, and you can't adapt. And I feel like that's where we put people in a box, or where we keep ourselves in a box, is because we're constantly being told, I'm supposed to work in GP. I know vaccines like the back of my hand, and everything else that comes with general practice. And just really trying your best to go to CE, as you were saying, and to learn about these skills, so that if you are able to get an interview for specialty medicine, you can floor them with the amount of knowledge that you get. Rather, it's like reading a book or, you know, brick and mortar CE, it's definitely beneficial. You want to blow them away. And then when you do, we all know that specialty medicine pays more because it's a little bit harder on your mental and emotional health. You know, you'll definitely nail it. It's going to take time. It's going to take time, I promise, but it'll be worth it. Just keep up with your studies, no matter how far you are in the profession. I still do it. I mean, again, I'm at a conference learning, and I've been doing this for 10, 11 years. So never stop learning. Definitely.
And would you say there are any, like, what are some misconceptions that people might have about being a vet tech that like would help those who are just starting that to kind of navigate through?
I would say, and I know everybody says this, but I'm going to say it too. You know, it's just about kittens and puppies, and it's really not. I very rarely get to see a puppy or a kitten. I mean, kittens are rare in my line of work. You know, it's definitely it's more technical than a lot of people think it is. You're doing drug calculations. You're having to do constant rate infusions. So CRIs, like pain drips. And you're having to really do these tasks that you can't mess up on at all, or it's truly life and death. You deal with a lot of patients that have zoonotic diseases. And for those that don't know, those are diseases that can be transferred from animals to humans and vice versa. You deal with a lot of that in clinical practice. And you need to know, like, the back of your hand, isolation protocols, quarantine protocols, because these are diseases you can truly get and that could kill you. And you know, that is not unheard of in veterinary medicine. And as you had mentioned, I do have my master's in public health. It is specifically in global health epidemiology. And I am such a stickler for everybody knowing quarantines and isolation, whether it's for humans or peoples, depending on certain diseases, sterilizing, disinfecting. I am a big fan of that. And so, you know, everyone thinks it's a lot easier than what it is. And sometimes it does get easier, you know, especially when you've been doing this for so long. It's, you know, it's just another day, but starting out, it's very intimidating. And you constantly feel as though you have imposter syndrome. And that being said, yeah, a lot of us still deal with it.
Yeah.
Decades later.
Imposter syndrome is massive. I feel like in any field, to be honest, it's hard to navigate through, because you believe it so strongly that you can't, like, you know what I mean? It's one of those beliefs that's so hard to, like, throw out the door. But you know, again, I think you're, like you said, like, it comes with time sometimes too. Like, having experience, making connections, feeling more and more comfortable is really important. And just like, I feel like, yeah, if you're just starting out, like not to put too much pressure on yourself for sure.
Oh, it is so much, so much. And what I'd also like to point out, because I did this, when you come out of school, and I'll pretend like I'm talking to the younger version of me. When you come out of school, do not be cocky or overconfident, because boy, did I get taken down like 5 pegs when I first came out. And then I was scared to do everything. And I actually am so happy that I was taken down a peg, because I needed that. I truly did. And then I just kind of built myself back up, and I feel like I became just a better person because of that. 1000%. Don't be too hard on yourself, but don't be overconfident. You know, we're all here to learn. I still learn from different areas of veterinary medicine, whether it's nutrition, no idea. I have no clue. So I definitely reach out to friends. When my cats need services that we don't provide, like dental cleanings, somebody else do them. I'm licensed to do it. Have no idea. I know what a tooth looks like, and that's about it.
Well, I can imagine just in medicine in general, like it would be pretty much impossible to know or to remember the details of each procedure and type of treatment, you know, like even if you're a dentist, I'm sure you have to, and you just do teeth, you have to like look up some things sometimes, you know, it's normal for sure.
Exactly. And also for, veterinary students, those who are going to get their doctorate in veterinary medicine, you will never, ever know every procedure. You won't know every suture pattern, x-ray positioning, diagnosis. It's not possible. I promise you that even professionals in their 50s and 60s, even 70s, are still looking in books. It's gonna happen. Don't sweat yourself. We all have been there. No one hasn't been there. And, we'll give you grace for a very, very, very long time. We definitely will. We're very sympathetic of that.
Oh, awesome. Oh, well, thank you so much for taking the time to share like your advice and experiences with us and our listeners. We do end our podcast with everybody with like a little Q&A just for you. It's really short answer, a short question type thing. My first one, and this is an as of now question. So what is your ultimate career goal as of now?
As of now, I want to be a veterinary epidemiologist, and they are definitely out there working for like drug companies, especially vaccine companies. That is my ultimate goal. And I know once I get to that point, I will truly be happy. I'm happy now, but I will feel like I accomplished something so much greater than I ever thought I would in my life. So that is it.
Awesome. That's amazing. My second question for you is, do you have like a quote or like a philosophy that you live by that helps you get through the day?
Oh, I do. I say this quite a lot. Lions don't lose sleep over, I can't remember it now. Of course, when I'm saying it out loud. Oh, lions don't lose sleep over the opinions of sheep. That is something I truly live by. And I don't know why I spaced on that. It's again, probably because I've been hydrated from crying all day.
No, it's a good catchy rhyming one too, right?
Yeah. But that is definitely when I heard that 6 years ago, that has always stuck with me because, again, I'm a victim of bullying, not immune to it. But for the most part, when I tell myself that, I'm like, all right, I got this. Yeah. You know, sometimes one or two slips through.
It helps everyone, I'm sure. Like, that's like a quote that can help anyone. 100%. And then who inspires you to continue to grow and change within the industry?
Would it sound too overconfident for me to say myself?
No, I love that.
I definitely, I do look up to myself in a way of where my internal dialogue might be me 10 years ago. And I never would have thought I would be here. As much as, you know, that's the big, you know, spotlights and, you know, the lights in the sky and all this good stuff, I never thought I was going to be where I am. And so I think because I'm sympathetic towards that, and I love new people to our field because they're still so happy. They're happy and they're not jaded. And that's just, I love it. I do look up to myself in that way. I just want to be there to support them and maybe give them the support that I didn't get or that other people didn't get.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And so where can people find you, like email, social media, website, all of that stuff?
So my Instagram at veterinary technicians is where you can find me. I spend most of my time there. On TikTok, my veterinary technicians account did get banned, so you'll find me as Nicole the Vet Tech. I do have a Facebook page as well. That is veterinary technicians. You can add me on Facebook as well. If you want to see pictures of all of my cats, which are Persians, that's the best place to go. And my email is NicoleTheVetTech@yahoo.com. And I try to be as responsive as possible, but obviously with how crazy our day-to-day basis can get, it might take me a few days to get back to you.
Awesome. So thanks again, Nicole. Like, we really appreciate you being with us. And yeah, a big thank you to our next pod listeners. Remember, you are the future. Join us next month for another in-depth talk.